the smile of the chipper. Johnson was reminiscing in the way old men do, and I had been warned he would talk about chippers, those peculiar people who flashed across the business scene for a generation at the beginning of this 21st century of ours. Still, I had had a good meal at his expense, and I was ready to listen. And, as it happened, it was the first word out of his mouth. "Chippers," he said, "were just about unregulated in those days. Nowadays their use is so controlled no one can get any good out of them, but back a ways, one of them made this company the $10 billion concern it now is. I picked him, you know." I said, "They didn't last long, I'm told." "Not in those days. They burned out. When you add microchips at key points in the nervous system, then in 10 years at the most, the wiring burns out, so to speak, then they're retired. A little vacant-minded, you know." I wonder anyone submitted to it. "Well, all the idealists were horrified, of course, and that's why the regulating came in. But it wasn't that bad for the chippers. Only certain people could make use of the microchips. About 80% of them males, for some reason. And for the time they were active, they lived the lives of shipping magnates. Afterward, they always received the best of care. It was no different from top-ranking athletes, after all, 10 years of active early life and then retirement." Johnson sipped at his drink. "An unregulated chipper could influence other people's emotions, you know, if they were chipped just right and had talent. They could make judgments on the basis of what they sensed in other minds, and they could strengthen some of the judgments competitors were making, or weaken them for the good of the home company. Well, it wasn't unfair. Other companies had their own chippers doing the same thing." He sighed. "Oh, now all that sort of thing's illegal. Too bad." I said diffidently, "I've heard that illegal chipping is still done." Johnson grunted and said, "No comment." I let that go, and he went on, "But even 30 years ago, things were still wide open. Our company was just an insignificant item in the global economy, but we had located 2 chippers who were willing to work for us." 2? I had never heard that before. Johnson looked at me slyly. "Yes, we managed that. It's not widely known in the outside world, but it came down to clever recruiting, and it was slightly, just a touch, illegal, even then. Of course, we couldn't hire them both. Getting 2 chippers to work together is impossible. They're like chess grandmasters, I suppose. Put them in the same room, and they would automatically challenge each other. They would compete continually, each trying to influence and confute the other. They wouldn't stop, well, couldn't, actually. And they would burn each other out in 6 months. Several companies found that out, to their great cost, when chippers first came into use."
"I can imagine," I murmured.
"So, since we couldn't have both and could only take one, we wanted the more powerful one, obviously. And that could only be determined by pitting them against each other without letting them ruin each other. I was given the job, and it was made quite clear that if I picked the one who in the end turned out to be inadequate, that would be my end, too."
"How did you go about it, sir?"
I knew he'd succeeded, of course. A person can't become chairman of the board of a world-class firm for nothing.
Johnson said, "I had to improvise. I investigated each separately first. The 2 were known by their code letters, by the way. In those days, their true identities had to be hidden. A chipper known to be a chipper was half useless. They were C-12 and F-71 in our records. Both were in their late 20s. C-12 was unattached. F-71 was engaged to be married."
"Married?" I said, a little surprised.
"Certainly.
Chippers are human. Male chippers are much sought after by women. They're sure to be rich, and when they retire, their fortunes are usually under the control of their wives. It's a good deal for a young woman. So I brought them together with F-71's fiancée. I hoped earnestly she would be good-looking, and she was. Meeting her was almost like a physical blow to me. She was the most beautiful woman I had ever seen. Tall, dark-eyed, a marvellous figure, and rather more than a hint of smouldering sexuality. Johnson seemed lost in thought for a moment. Then he continued, "I tell you, I had a strong urge to try to win the woman for myself, but it was not likely that anyone who had a chipper would transfer herself to a mere junior executive, which is what I was in those days. To transfer herself to another chipper would be something else. And I could see that C-12 was as affected as I was. He could not keep his eyes off her. So I just let things develop to see who ended with the young woman." "And who did, sir?" I asked. It took 2 days of intense mental conflict. They must each have peeled a month off their working lives. But the young lady walked off with C-12 as her new fiancé.
"Ah,
so you chose C-12 as the firm chipper?" Johnson stared at me with disdain.
"Are you mad?"
"I did no such thing. I chose F-71, of course. We placed C-12 with a small subsidiary of ours. He'd be no good to anyone else, since we knew him, you see."
"But, did I miss something?"
"F-71 lost his fiancée, and C-12 gained her. Surely C-12 was the superior."
"Was he?"
"Chippers show no emotion in a case like this, no obvious emotion. It is necessary for business purposes for chippers to hide their powers so that the poker face is a professional necessity for them. But I was watching closely. My own job was at stake. And as C-12 walked off with the woman, I noticed a small smile on F-71's lips, and it seemed to me there was the glitter of victory in his eyes."
"But he lost his fiancée."
"Doesn't it occur to you that he wanted to lose her, and it would not be easy to pry her loose? He had to work on C-12 to want her, and on the woman to want to be wanted, and he did it. He won." I thought about that.
But how could you have been sure?
If the woman was as good-looking as you say she was, if she was smouldering so with sexuality, surely F-71 would have wanted to keep her.
"But F-71 was making her seem desirable," said Johnson grimly.
"He aimed at C-12, of course, but with such power that the overflow was sufficient to affect me drastically. After it was all over, and C-12 was walking away with her, I was no longer under the influence, and I could see there was something hard and overblown about her, a kind of unlovely and predatory gleam in her eye. So I chose F-71 at once, and he was all we could want. The firm is now where you see it is, and I am chairman of the board."